In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. In a recent show addressing the health impacts regarding the deployment of mandated, untested 5G infrastructure into human environments, our guests, Jeanette Hasberg, Donna Janelle, and Guy Ventresca, mentioned the work of biophysicist Dr. Beverly Rubick. We hear part of her presentation at the Union Theological Seminary in New York City. Dr. Beverly Rubick earned her Ph.D. in biophysics at the University of California in Berkeley and has conducted research for nearly 40 years on the energy fields of living organisms termed biofields. She's an internationally recognized expert on the biofield and energy medicine and the author of more than 90 scientific papers and 2 books. Dr. Rubick has conducted research on the effects of 4G microwave radiation on human exposure and the blood. Dr. Rubick is founder and president of the Institute for Frontier Science, a nonprofit laboratory in Emeryville, California. She is an adjunct faculty member in the College of Integrative Health Studies at Saybrook University in Pasadena. We go now to see a part of that presentation.
Thank you so much, Byron, for your kind introduction. And it's really great to see all of you. And if you're here tonight, it's because you've taken the red pill. And you'll see what I mean. First, I'm going to describe what 5G is, how it works, and then some of the health and environmental challenges, and then also delve into some of the political issues, some of the laws, and some of the activism that I'm aware of, at least in my region. And finally, I'm going to give you positive ways to deal with some of these things, not all of them, but of course we're all working together to try to either put a moratorium on this until it's proven safe or to figure out how we can live safely and be well in the presence of an enhanced 4G and the new 5G. So that's the structure of tonight's lecture. So smoking in my lifetime was once considered glamorous and recommended even by physicians as being good for your health. Here are some ads from late 40s, early 1950s. So this is just what the doctor ordered, and movie stars with their beautiful smiles advertising tobacco. So in many ways, wireless is the tobacco of the digital age. In other words, it's a bit of a fad, as smoking was back in those years. Everybody has something wireless, multiple wireless devices, and actually there's an exponential increase in wireless devices in our environment, and it's going to grow stronger and stronger. So the wireless world around us, I should say one more thing. Smoke is something we can smell, we can sense, and we know it's present, but the thing about wireless radiation from communication devices is that we have no sensoria to know it's present. Unless you have a meter or a dosimeter, you don't know what you're being exposed to. And so that makes it different. Some have likened it even to asbestos, which is very hard to remove once it's in place. And that is one of my fears about 5G. If we put up an infrastructure and then we find out that it's really not healthy, that we're suffering, the animals and plants are suffering, well, who's going to pull it down and what do we do then? So we have to wise up about this before it's installed. And the installation is upon us. Already the rollout is starting worldwide, and 2020 is the time when we can expect very wide rollout of 5G in our environments around the world. So we have this plethora of wireless devices. Everything from smart meters that fit into the smart grid, from computers that operate on wireless, from cell phones and tablets and Wi-Fi routers. And it's only going to grow because 5G promises the Internet of Things, whereby many of your appliances, and maybe all of them eventually, will be hooked up to the Internet. So that's what's coming. So this is exponentially increasing, but if we go back and look historically, how did this come to pass? It was back in 1992 when broadband first came into vogue. In 1996, we had the first generation of wireless with cell phones and towers, but very few of them, and a cell phone was a big clunky device in those years. In 1998, the beginning of some low-orbit satellites delivering these frequencies, so-called 2G. And in 2001, the beginning of Wi-Fi with 3G. Then in 2007 was the introduction of the smartphone, which has now grown to be the major communication device, personal communication device on Earth, and that's 4G, under which we presently operate. But 5G is coming. We will still have 3G, 4G, and possibly some 2G. They're just adding more. What will it do? Well, it will give us faster download speeds, according to the ads out there. It will bring in self-driving cars and their capability to be targeted by satellites and safely navigate, we wonder. It will expand virtual reality and give us augmented reality and bring about this vast Internet of Things, whereby billions of devices, many of them currently in our homes and offices, are going to be hooked up to the Internet. So that's what 5G is all about. And it's much more complex than the earlier generations because it has multiple frequencies, not just a couple of them, like one for cell phone sending, one for cell phone receiving, and ditto for Wi-Fi, just a couple of frequencies in the microwave region. 5G extends from microwaves all the way to the millimeter wave region, the so-called gigahertz bands. And previously, these waves were often used for radar, by the military, by the police force, and the higher frequencies here, 95 gigahertz, is used by the military for a non-lethal weapon called the Active Denial Program, where they can disperse a crowd by beaming 95 gigahertz on the crowd, unbeknownst to them, and they will feel their skin is intensively burning and they will run. You can see videos of this online. So this will be one of the frequencies of 5G, as we understand it. And the Federal Communications Commission, or the FCC, which is the organization in the federal government responsible for allocating these frequencies, is already licensing some of these bands to the various providers or companies such as Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, and Sprint, and there may be others. And so the licensing is not yet fully accomplished, but it's underway. Now, the infrastructure on Earth, of course, we're talking about the equipment. What is needed is a lot of infrastructure. It will cost an enormous amount of money, many billions of dollars. And where I live, they've already rolled out this thick cable, as you see here, the fattest cable connecting our phone poles, is consisting of fiber optics, which is cross-sectioned here. So they are clear tubes through which visible light passes and can carry digital signals. Now, if 5G were simply fiber optic cables with digitally pulsed light, I would be truly delighted because this is completely safe. There's no blowback on any organism. Everything is self-contained within this fiber and within that cable. But then, from the point where these cables end on the post, they're going to be installing these 5G antennas, which look like large cylinders. That's merely a shroud around the phased array of antennas inside. And with it, there's also a very large power supply, about the size of a mailbox. Here's one. In some places, they're going to have this on the ground in public rights of way, or it could be put on your easement. It depends on your telecom ordinance in your city and county where these things may go. So you may want to check into that online and start talking locally to your government if you feel the placement of these things is otherwise than you'd like. So here's the shroud and inside the phased array antennas. So these are the structures on Earth, and there's going to be millions of them. They're talking about placing these so-called small cell antennas for 5G every 200 to 1,000 feet, even in our residential areas, even near our schools, in places where we haven't had cell phone antennas. That really concerns me because these things will be at a virtually bedroom level if you have a second floor home, and telephone poles are all over the place, so you may be just a few feet from sleeping near one of these installations. And what is that going to do over the long run? Well, we really don't know, because we don't have those long-term studies. We only have short-term studies. So we can expect millions of these antennas. I can tell you I've been involved in the Oakland community where I live about this, because I'm concerned about these things entering our residential neighborhoods as well as around schools. And for a while, the city was hearing from us that we don't want this. But and for the health reasons, as I stood up and made a speech to the city council, but they said, you know, we don't have any jurisdiction over that. So you can only talk really about design of the antenna, of the shroud, and maybe the color of it, and maybe a little bit about the placement if you feel it's a busy intersection and maybe it would cause an accident or something. But we don't have jurisdiction over health and wellness or environment, really. So anyway, I'll say a little later how that came to pass. It's very amazing that our local communities seem to have lost jurisdiction over the people's health and the local environment, but it is so, according to certain federal laws. The other infrastructure for 5G will be out in space. And the recent estimate is some 42,000 5G satellites that will be blasting the Earth so that every square inch of Earth is covered with these frequencies that will come down from these satellites in lower Earth orbits. Three companies in particular are responsible for these. SpaceX is Elon Musk's firm, which will make most of the satellites. Amazon is number two, and another company called OneWeb. And I went to the website of OneWeb, and it's boldly said on its homepage, "We will cover you wherever you are." Yes. So you can see back in 1957, that was the beginning of the space age with the Russians' launch of the Sputnik. I remember it well. I was a little girl. So that was the very first satellite that went into space around Earth. By 1993, we already had a lot of satellites. And by 2018, you can see this bird's eye view of Earth. We have probably 5,000 satellites out there already doing global positioning satellites and some for 4G and 3G, but this is going to make 42,000 more satellites in our environment. And I should also mention that the 5G will not involve a loss of 4G. Actually, the 5G antennas that they're going to install will be at the flip of a switch able to also deliver 4G. In other words, we're going to see a densification of 4G frequencies as well as the advance of the 5G frequencies. So the current presidential administration is on a race for 5G, and we're fighting versus the Chinese to beat them, according to President Trump. It's estimated that this will cost many trillions of dollars to bring it forward. And so the federal government is mandated a fast track through the FCC and through certain rulings. Now, I've been to China within the last 8 months, and I can tell you I really think they're ahead of us. First of all, Huawei, which is one of the main telecom firms making wireless 5G out of Shenzhen, China, right near Hong Kong is their capital of Huawei. They already have the chipsets for these frequencies, and of course, the Chinese can always make it less expensive. So when we roll out our chipsets, they're going to be more costly. We can expect that more countries and possibly parts of the U.S. will rely on Huawei. I know President Trump's concern is that perhaps the Chinese may spy on the American public if we were to use Huawei, but I think there are also financial considerations here, because if we don't do it, then the Chinese will gain financially. So, you know, that's what that's all about. There's a lot of talk about the economic benefits of 5G in terms of stimulating the economy and making breakthroughs, whatever they are, in the future. We don't even know what that may hold. And his administration wants to be the first, or at least he's guided by advisors that tell him that. So it's quite concerning that that is the case. Now, there are some laws on the books. These are federal laws that I'd like you to know about. The Wireless Communications Act of 1996, signed into law by President Clinton, actually prohibited local governments from considering health and even environmental effects when considering proposed wireless installations. I mean, 1996, we barely had Wi-Fi in our environment, but the telecom industry, through lobbyists and through legislators who were probably greased by the money of telecom in their campaign funds, made this possible, put this into words that was passed and signed into law. And it's really amazing because now we're stuck with this law. Local communities apparently have no jurisdiction because of this federal law, but it's being contested by many governments, local governments, who feel that their local jurisdiction is being breached by the federal government, that it's not constitutional. So we shall see where that leads. There are lawsuits in place. I know that two cities that I know well in the San Francisco Bay Area, both Mill Valley and San Jose, have sued the federal government over issues such as this and the FCC ruling, which I'll say in a moment. And that's interesting to note because San Jose is really part of Silicon Valley, protesting this law. Also, back in September 2018, the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, said that they're in complete control now of the 5G rollout. It's not up to local communities, and there's a fast track. And now many cities have had thousands of applications for permits for these new antennas, and they have no time to review them. I know in Oakland we've had 3,000 or 4,000, and now it's becoming a rubber stamp operation. Have no time to read this lengthy thing even, have to just push it through because the FCC says we're on a fast track. We've got to get it all done. There's a so-called 60 to 90 day shot clock, and already that shot clock is over by now, by November 2019, that was mandated by them, and it really prevented adequate local review. So we've got these things coming to your neighborhood school regions, to your residential homes, without any environmental review. That's the main thing. And people are pointing that out, that we have on the among the federal laws, we have the National Environment Policy Act that goes back yet to 1969 that may be violated here because there has been no widespread environmental review of 5G and no impact statement that has been drafted. So some governments are taking this on and suing the government, saying you've got to do this review. It hasn't been proven safe. And you're talking about such a wide rollout worldwide without a white zone, without a place to go if there is somebody who's sensitive. And we know there are people who are sensitive, as I'll tell you later. So 2020, it's the target date for the 5G rollout here in the United States. And we can expect that every device that we currently use will be made obsolete, and then we're going to need to buy new ones that will have 5G. So that's an enormous expense for all of us, plus an enormous carbon footprint in terms of throwing out or the heaps of old devices, and the onset of new devices is formidable. The antennas of 5G, the 5G satellites, the 5G routers, the 5G smartphones. And then the Internet of Things, of course, the so-called smart appliances that will be responsive and blipping out 5G frequencies as well. So it's the largest thing of its kind in maybe the history of the Earth to see a technological thing at this scale and to see it on a fast track and coming to you tomorrow. It's just totally amazing. So 5G is different, as you heard, in some ways. First of all, they're planning the total coverage of the Earth. That means national parks, which presently don't have Wi-Fi. Where are those animals going to go? You know, we find, and it's been shown in one of the Australian national parks, that where they put in Wi-Fi, the animals left. They simply went elsewhere. And where are ours going to go? And plants are impacted as well. I'll say some words about that later. So the animals are affected in terms of their orientation and navigation. And I know bees are drastically affected by this. They can't even zoom in on a flower. They can't smell anymore. They can't learn. And there's colony collapse. So they're planning millions of antennas and thousands of satellites beaming those frequencies, covering the Earth. And it's not like broadcasting. And I'll show you the distinction in a future slide here. Broadcasting is like dropping a pebble into water and the waves spread out evenly and they get weaker with distance. These are focused beams, like pencil-thin beams, not lasers, but thin enough. They were like lasers. They're not coherent like lasers. But in any case, they will go out over here and there and pass around in milliseconds or microseconds through your environment. They may come right through your body to energize your cell phone, for example. So, as I said, it also includes high-frequency millimeter waves that were used by the military for radar and weapons. And here's another thing. Only extremely expensive military equipment can measure especially the high 5G frequencies, the millimeter waves. There's no simple meter that you can buy. Right now, you can buy a 4G meter, and you can measure your workplace, your sleeping place, where you spend time, your home, and get a sense of your exposure. But with 5G, nobody's going to be able to do this except maybe the industry and the military. This equipment costs about $150,000, and you need more than a PhD to use it. It's very complicated. And so we don't have a way for the public to monitor themselves, and so they may leave it up to the industry. And even the studies on 5G health effects by the industry are different from independent studies. They produce different results that are not harmful. So we can't really trust the industry to make these measurements on our communities, but that's where it's being pushed. And in my community, we're trying to get independent measurement, at least, independent oversight of what exposures are we getting, especially as we have multiple providers, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint. Are they going to have multiple antennas in our communities too? I mean, it becomes just amazing and formidable. So here's a comparison of broadcasting versus beamforming. You can see there on the left the standard angle of about 120 degrees for wide-angle broadcasts. There are usually about three 4G antennas, each at 120 degrees. On the cell phone towers of today. But 5G will be different. It will have many so-called phased array, a lot of different little antennas underneath that cylindrical shroud that you saw. And these beams will be going out and maybe spending a microsecond in each direction. So it's a very different concept, beamforming of 5G. Here's a little bit more technical slide to show you. The near field is very intense, but there will also be lobes. So the main beam will go in one direction, but then you see side beams as well. And all of these, of course, will add up because many devices will be emitting the Internet of Things, the antennas, your phones, everything around you. So it'll be an endless barrage of signals. So here I have a chart showing the numbers of times above nature in engineering units we're being exposed to. Basically, nature, that is the sun and the stars, are not producing any microwaves or millimeter waves. At least none of them are reaching the Earth. So down here is the green zone. This is nature. It's essentially, it's minus 115 decibels or 1.8 picowatts per meter squared. That's really negligible. But you can take a meter and walk through various cities. I unfortunately didn't bring my meter here to New York, but I've walked through the streets of San Francisco, and I can tell you we find about minus 35 decibels, which is here, somewhere between severe anomaly and extreme anomaly. Who set these standards are the biologists. These are the people, the building biologists, who work to produce clean environments for their clients. Electromagnetic pollution is reduced, chemical pollution reduced, et cetera, with healthy building materials. So they consider what I measure just in the streets of San Francisco somewhere between a severe and an extreme anomaly. Yes. And then you go in the buildings where there's Wi-Fi or nearby someone who's using a wireless device, and these values go even higher. They go in the red zones. And we have a limit in the United States of some 10 decibels per meter up here, along with Canada. We have possibly the highest guidelines set in the world for the most exposure, because China, Russia, and Switzerland have values that are between 100 and 1,000 times less than our guidelines. And it's not exactly clear why our guidelines are so severe, why we allow such high levels, but we do. And yet, when I go to Europe, my phone works perfectly fine. So it's not a matter of my phone not working at a lower level. It's a matter of a decision of the FCC and listening to the industry about so-called thermal limits out here. And we're just a little bit below that. But we're really higher along with Canada than any other country, and there's no excuse for that. This is a chart of the electromagnetic spectrum, and on the far left are the long waves, first the ELF and then the radio spectrum here. Also, microwave is sometimes also considered part of the radio wave spectrum. And just above it are the millimeter waves. And then we have the terahertz, which is the frequencies they're using in the airports in that scanner where you put your hands like this and they scan you. That's the terahertz waves, not a healthy wave either. And then we have infrared. And all these waves below the visible region have been called non-ionizing radiation, which means we thought that they didn't make ions in the body. The waves above visible light, ultraviolet, X-rays, gammas, are well known to have deleterious effects to life. They cause ionizing effects. It's ionizing radiation, and you get free radical production and things like superoxide ion, and you have to fight and worry about this, which is why they put lead aprons on you when you get your teeth x-rayed at the dentist. So it was thought that only these rays produced ions and free radicals, but now, from a plethora of evidence, we also know that this region in the radio frequency region, including the microwaves and the millimeter waves, also produce free radicals in our bodies, which are not healthy. These are very highly reactive ionic species that then go on to react with all of your biomolecules, your DNA, your proteins, your especially your unsaturated fats, poking holes in cells, allowing things that shouldn't happen suddenly to happen. So they do a broad range of biochemistry pollution inside the body. So here's the radio spectrum, but there's more. We're talking about a digital spectrum. What does that mean? You know, digits are ones and zeros. That's really what computers manipulate. It's something is either off or on, zero off, one on. That's what's meant by digital. So these waves are not continuous, but they're pulsed, like a big pulse and then maybe a still time when there's a zero, and then another big pulse and maybe a train of them, several in a row, and then nothing. Now, no living thing can adapt to such a train of waves, such a sequence of waves over time. I could, for example, stand at the light switch and go on, off, 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 and try that for the rest of your life. That's what we're talking about. And, you know, the government reports on the average value of that on and off and says, well, you're only exposed to really low light because it was on and off, and we're only looking at thermal effects here, as it's called in physics. The average doesn't really impact you, but that's an inaccurate way. It's a really twisted view of addressing the science. And it's really totally unfair not to consider the non-thermal effects, as you'll see. Life is an analog beings, as we are, and is used to continuous waves in the environment, like sunlight shining on us is coming continuously, maybe varying over the course of the day or the hour. And the spectrum of sunlight is also continuous, not like these LED lights that we're now using in our streets and homes. This is healthy light, peaking in the green and going down to infrared and a little bit of ultraviolet. That's what reaches the Earth. That's healthy light, and we need to get exposure daily. And yet, people have been scared to go in the sun now. I'm telling you, the news has frightened people to the point of using sunscreens or hats or staying out of it during the brightest times. It's completely wrong, really. Light is essential to life, not just plants, but animals. And you feel healthier when you get out there and fresh air and sunlight. So we have nothing digital in nature. This is totally man-made, and man-made signals now of the digital age. And being analog beings, we can't adapt to these. But I can tell you that 6G, which is coming out in 2030, will be the interface of the machine to the human body. By then, they will have figured out that we can't handle this, I suppose. So just to give you an idea of what is in the radio frequency, this is a chart that's available online of the radio spectrum. Here is the allocations from the FCC and the military of, I just show you this, I know you can't read it, but it's a very complex chart showing some shared allocations and some singular ones and very few regions that have been untouched. In other words, it's already allocated to the various industries and military installations, radar, etc. Now, here's a closer view of that, but here is, are the 5G frequencies overlaid? And you see how numerous and how complicated, what a great portion of the radio frequency spectrum we will be using with 5G. Very, very different from earlier generations. And we know those higher frequencies have more biological effects as well. So now let's take a look at the devices. Well, we've got 7 billion cell phones worldwide. And it really breaks my heart to see children use them as shown here, held to the head. And yet, people give the phones to their child. The child wants the phone, wants to talk to a relative, or wants to play with a wireless device, used as a pacifier. It's very sad. You see, people with, well, Bluetooth is one thing, but this is much worse. The Bluetooth also on your ear is about one-third of radiation of a cell phone, and it too can play havoc with your health. But it's become the main personal communication device, and so we have to be very concerned. Here's where we have the most control, really, over our choices, as you'll see toward the end of my talk, in terms of limiting our exposure. So what happens when you put a cell phone to your head? Well, it depends on who you are. If you're a young child, that microwave radiation penetrates most of the brain. The skull of a child is about a half a millimeter thick and will allow most of the radiation to impact the entire brain. This is why children should never be given cell phones, because they are developing. Their brains are still growing and developing, and they're learning. And numerous biological experiments show that every developing organism is more sensitive to pollution or stressors, and they can have a breakdown or a deficit in their development from such exposure, and we don't even know how, because it's never really been studied. A 10-year-old has 1 millimeter thick skull, and so radiation will penetrate less, but still more than the adult, where the skull is 2 millimeters thick, and then you get less penetration. But still, even with that, nobody should be holding a cell phone to their brain. I can tell you, because I've looked at the brain waves in electroencephalograms, the EEG. Normally, people have more coherence in their brain waves. That's a sign of health and wellness and concentration or being awake. And when they put a cell phone to their head, it looks like an electromagnetic storm in some cases. In other cases, it looks like epilepsy. And if you were to keep putting a device to your head that created aberrant neurological patterns, what do you think happens after years of use? Well, you're actually training a disease state. You're training your brain to make aberrant waves. That we know brain waves are associated with learning and behavior and state of consciousness. So this is serious, and we should never put a cell phone to our head, no matter what age, but especially the children. And we know that there are some thermal effects. People feel that their ear heats up a little bit when they hold their phone. Some people feel sensations, but by and large, we're pretty blind to, we don't have a sensation of what happens inside the brain from other effects that are not just thermal. But this is shown on thermography, that there is heating. But beyond tissue heating, wireless does something really worse, and that is it opens up what's called the blood-brain barrier. This is a barrier that prevents certain toxic chemicals from entering your brain. It's like a membrane that's not so permeable. But when you put a cell phone near your head, after about 10 minutes, this membrane gets porous, and then toxins get into your brain that otherwise would be excluded. And that's the blood-brain barrier being disrupted. So microwaves damage it. Then chemical toxins from our environment, from agrochemicals, glyphosate, from vaccines, preservatives such as mercury and aluminum, and the adjuvants that are in our vaccines that are actually pro-inflammatory chemicals that are there to stimulate and aggravate an immune response to the little bit of antigen present in those vaccines. So we have an epidemic these days of diseases like autism, of attention deficit disorder, attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder. And we're getting into an epidemic of more chronic diseases of the elderly, like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. And I think there's reason to suspect that we can point to this problem as one of the causal factors. And certainly, children are getting vaccines. Everyone's getting exposed to agrochemicals. There was a study in the Journal of the American Medical Association that showed that glyphosate, which is basically the technical name for Roundup, the herbicide previously made by Monsanto, now shuffled over to Bayer due to the merger, that is in our urine, that we have it inside our bodies. And it was studied and shown to every adult, even those consuming organics. Even the organic wines of California have been shown to have glyphosate, much to my dismay. So we have this 1-2 punch. We have chemical toxins, we have electromagnetic waves also acting. And yet it's often so that activists are working on one item. They may be working against mercury in vaccines, but they're seemingly unaware that Wi-Fi is interacting with this, producing more damage, because now this stuff can get into the brain. So we have to consider systems of pollution and not just the single entities that are polluting us when we become activists in this realm, because these things are working in concert, sad to say, synergistically damaging our brains. Now, we have no safety standards for wireless. The word is guidelines. Lots of people use blatantly the word safety standard or standard. That's a misnomer, because if you really go to the FCC website or the FDA website, you will see clearly the word guideline. They know they don't have any standards. And Dr. Barry Trower, who is an expert on microwave weapons in the UK, he's now retired. He has addressed this question more than most. You could watch some very informative videos of Dr. Barry Trower on this issue of what are the standards. Can we come to standards? He would probably say we shouldn't be using this stuff from what he knows about microwaves. So, well, age, pregnancy, years of exposure are factors. One thing I can tell you is that the doses are cumulative. That means the more you get, the worse off you are. Just like X-rays or radioactivity. You know, people can die from an overdose of radioactivity, as we've seen at Fukushima, going in too soon to clean it up, hours later, death. So these waves are doing the same thing, but at a lower level. And we're going to now have worldwide exposure for the rest of our lives, where we don't have a clue what the standards are, and we haven't had this conversation as a whole with people. And we don't know our dosage. Oh, pregnant women, of course, are more at risk. The fetus is more at risk, and you see women often balancing a tablet right on their abdomens or juggling a young child in one hand with a cell phone in the other hand. And as I said earlier, it's impossible for us to adapt to these pulsed digital signals. Then we have to consider how the phones are used and carried. Many people keep a phone on, ready to receive a call or text, right in their pocket, right in the chest pocket or the pants pocket, and right near major organs and tissues that are susceptible. And there's been cases of cancer where a woman tucked it in the bra. In fact, the tumor was exactly the shape of the cell phone antenna in her breast. Yes, you can see evidence of this online. So how the phones are used and how they're carried, everybody's unique in this regard. We know the younger generations use it more than the elders. And some people just have it on all the time and even sleep with it or right next to it, totally oblivious about safety issues. We really don't know the long-term exposure issues. All of the studies, of course, necessarily are on short-term animal, plant, and human studies, because we haven't had a continuous outpouring of this forever and ever. So we only know really short-term effects, and the long-term exposure is really unknown. So you can see it's a very complex question, and there's no consensus. You ask different engineers, different experts, you'll get different answers. And we have only guidelines. So here's how we see people using these devices. Pregnant women with tablets right near their fetus, young children lovingly touching wireless devices and touching pictures, watching them move, and seemingly mesmerized by these things. Even the potty trainer that I've seen has a wireless screen built in where the child can scroll and enjoy themselves and learn to multitask at a very early age, because that's coming for them in future life. We've all learned to multitask with all of these devices in our lives. So there we are. And the wireless baby monitors in the United States, I've noticed all of them in Europe were wired when I was there. There wasn't a wireless one. So you can apparently get them in Europe and not here. So the official view on exposure guidelines and safety that were set really by the telecom industry telling the FCC what it wanted, and I should mention the FCC is a group of five people who come from the industry. It's only five people, yes. None of them are scientists. None of them are doctors or healthcare workers. None of them know anything about the environment. They're basically engineers or businessmen, and they moved from the industry to the FCC, so now they're all in bed with one another. And it's been said that the FCC is really a captured part of the federal government by the telecom industry. So they've set this thing called specific absorption rate as their guideline, not to exceed 1.6 watts per kilogram. And recently they took some time to review this guideline, and they said, we'll keep the same guideline for 5G. Well, of course, we already have almost saturated conditions with 4G. I don't know how that's going to work. And this is really only based on thermal heating. What does that mean? They start with this little mannequin, a kind of head and shoulders mannequin, and it's hollow, and they fill it with salt water, with physiological saline. They put a temperature thermistor or thermometer in the center of the head, and then they strap on a cell phone on this mannequin, and they're looking for evidence where the interior of the salt solution will heat up. That's how they determine what's safe. Okay? They're not considering the wave train of digital pulses that are very disruptive and aggravating, to which no brain wave can adapt, no heart wave. No organism can adapt. So it's called the thermal effects. That's all they're really looking for. And they totally ignore what other countries use, such as Russia. Russia's done a lot more research on this whole realm of radio frequencies and health. Their guidelines for exposure are 100 times less than the U.S., and they do pay attention to non-thermal effects. And I'll tell you what those are in a subsequent slide. In Austria, 1,000 times lower guidelines than the United States. Another telling fact is that the U.S. insurance companies do not insure any cell phone providers or the industry that provides the signals, the wireless telecom industries, because they know there are health risks. So they can't get any insurance whatsoever. Interesting. So what are the health effects of wireless due to non-thermal effects? This is a short list, but it will show you that there are effects from the atomic and molecular realms, all the way up to performance and behavior in humans. So it's a very wide range, from involving also gene expression and breakdown due to disease. So we see damage in the DNA, breaks in the DNA, and uncoiling. We see mutations in the DNA. Most of these studies were done on animals to show these effects, our close relatives like monkeys or rodents. And altered gene expression, even in fruit flies exposed to typical doses of cell phone radiation that a human would get, we see a total different gene expression coming out, which we don't even know what that means. We see reduced sperm count and fertility, and that's been known in a few studies offshore in humans. Male sperm count and the motility of the sperm, the movement of the sperm was totally damaged. So the sperm were essentially dead, unable to fertilize. And there was a study on mice where they put cages of mice near a Wi-Fi router, which is 2.4 gigahertz. By the way, that's the same frequency as microwave ovens. Not a healthy one. But the mice near these routers proliferated, and every generation made less and less mice until the fourth generation, which became irreversibly sterile. No more mice. So this is all in the literature. I'm not making this up. And the literature of many countries and thousands of papers in peer-reviewed scientific and health journals. So let's go on. Detrimental effects on fetal and child development. Certainly seen clearly in rodents and monkeys. Not so clear on adults, because who's going to do those experiments on humans? Certainly difficult, if not impossible. You wouldn't want to destroy a child. Neurological changes, including brain degeneration and cognitive impairment and learning and memory deficits. Dr. Dietrich Klinghardt, who's a holistic physician in Seattle, did an experiment on people who were healthy and said, I have no sensitivity to cell phone or wireless radiation. And he put them and cloaked them so that they did not experience any. They were literally shielded from the cell phone and Wi-Fi radiation. And they admitted in questionnaires in a study that they could think more clearly, and they couldn't believe it because it was like 90% could think more clearly and concentrate compared to the usual state here in the world exposed to relatively high levels. So we know that even people who claim not to be sensitive are having effects on concentration. Oxidative stress is what goes on at the cellular and subcellular level. So these free radicals form. They're highly reactive species that are charged. They have free electrons, and they want to bind to something and rip out electrons from something else. And so they play havoc with all your biomolecules, including DNA, proteins, and fats. So they will simply slowly irk the functionality of cells and destroy their structure. Of course, your cells can try to repair themselves, but then it becomes a game of breakdown and repair every night you try to sleep, and sleep is also affected. So cardiovascular disease, we see this, the beginning of palpitations and then escalation to heart arrhythmias and even more severe heart ailments, because the heart is probably the most important electrical organ in the body. When you start aggravating it with strange frequencies, then you're leading toward heart disease. So a metabolic and immune system disruption, eye and skin damage. We have, I would say, an epidemic of cataracts, even in middle-aged people today, from screens, the brightness of screens, and blue light, which is not very good for them. And the World Health Organization has classified 4G as a human 2B class carcinogen, which means that it's a probable carcinogen. And they've linked it to higher incidences of brain cancer, gliomas, which are very deadly forms of brain cancer that are practically a death sentence. People usually last up to maybe 1 or 2 years maximum. And acoustic neuromas. And there's even salivary gland tumors in the cheeks because of use of cell phones that people never saw before the advent of cell phones. So the non-thermal effects are well documented. There are thousands of studies. Here are just a few websites where you can read them, you can access them. Bioinitiative.org, there are 1,800 references to the peer-reviewed literature. And European reference also, which is in the National Library of Medicine, is shown at this PubMed site. And then an even older reference that was given by the military after all their experiences with radar in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, the Glaser Report of 1971 that summarized a lot of the radar damage in the military on human studies as well. So those are just a few of the websites where this is listed for you, and it's out there. It's available to all. These are usually free studies. You can just download them. So besides the free radical damage that I mentioned with very fast reactive species, there's another possible mechanism by which the waves, both microwaves and millimeter waves, may be damaging our bodies. It may be opening certain ion channels on the cell membrane and allowing more calcium or other key electrolytes to penetrate. So getting more calcium in the cell is problematic because calcium is highly regulated because it itself is a regulator that enters into regulating many biochemical reactions in our bodies. So thereby we begin to see multiple effects from biochemical up to epigenetic and genetic levels. And if you're interested in exploring this, I recommend the publications and the websites by Dr. Martin Paul, P-A-L-L. He has done a lot of work on this. So electrosensitivity, this is a growing syndrome that was recognized by the World Health Organization already back in 2011. Back then they said between 3% and 6% of the population is already electrosensitive, and this number is probably upwards of about 10%. Many of you may not realize that some of your symptoms may indicate that you're sensitive to Wi-Fi or your own cell phone. And here are some of the common symptoms. You don't have to have all of these to be electrosensitive, but if you find yourself working extensively with a wireless device and then feeling one or more of these symptoms, you've got electrosensitivity. Headaches, anxiety, irritability, sleep problems, restlessness, brain fog, difficulty concentrating, memory issues, ringing in the ears or tinnitus, heart palpitations and arrhythmias, depression, fatigue, and there are others. Nosebleeds is a recent one. So I bought a desktop computer. With it came a wireless mouse and a wireless keyboard, which is fairly standard whether you need them or not. Because at a workstation, you're not running around the house. Why do you need a wireless mouse? Why a wireless keyboard? Well, they come this way. It's considered sexy to have wireless. As I said, it's a fad, like smoking. So I was sitting in front of this thing over hours. I started to get irregular heartbeats. And I recognized that I might have some sensitivity, but I also said, well, I'm getting older. Maybe I'm having a heart problem. But the minute I switched back to wired keyboard and wired mouse, guess what? My palpitations went away in a short time. So it showed me that I myself, who know all these things, you know, was suffering from an aspect of electrosensitivity. We should all be electrosensitive. These people are our canaries. The canaries in the coal mine who are telling us something is radically wrong with the plethora of these devices and the way we're using them so frequently and keeping them on as if they're passive and like FM radios. They're not. They're active. This is an interesting report by Blue Cross and Blue Shield that studies over 100,000 millennials, millennials born between 1980 and year 2000. And they're probably the least healthy generation in the history of the United States, I'm sorry to say. And I'm not blaming them. I just want to point out the data. First of all, they're the generation that grew up using wireless. And they're heavy users. They rely on it. They communicate with one another, texting and calling and Facebooking and all of that. And we've seen a sharp decline in their health already at age 27. And this study looked especially between a three-year period, 2014 to 2017, and found depression up 31% in 3 years, hyperactivity up 29%, type 2 diabetes up 22%, hypertension, high blood pressure, up 16%. Ages 34 to 36 had 21% more cardiovascular conditions and 15% more endocrine conditions in 2017 than 2014. And it's certainly not the only factor in their lives that would predispose them to these chronic things. But wireless is clearly a factor we can't ignore. I suppose it's one of the key factors, although I can't prove that. The tricky thing about these sorts of toxins is that you don't see a one-to-one direct relationship with any particular disease, but rather you see a constellation of symptoms and increased chronic disease patterns forming, because that's what stressors do to the body, to our bodies and our minds. They work at all the levels of order, organization in the organism, and they produce havoc at all levels. So lifelong wireless irradiation may be a major factor here, and it's a very sad thing, and I hope the message gets out to them that they need to change the way they use these devices in their lives. I want to tell you about a pilot study I did on 4G. And my research question was, is the blood affected by a short-term exposure to a smartphone? Of course, I was using 4G phones because this was done a few years ago. And even now, there are no 5G phones yet, coming soon. So my study design was exploratory with 10 healthy adults. I used a single smartphone. And the adults range in age from about 21 to 75. And there were also adults who were eating very good diets because I had to look at blood and make sure that they started out looking healthy in the blood in the study because I was looking for damage in the blood. And so I chose people consuming the diet of our ancestors, that is organic produce, vegetables, fruits, raw milk, raw cheeses, animal meat that was pastured, raw wild fish, and olive oil and coconut oil, but not the industrial made oils. So that was the diet, and they basically had, most of them had very good looking blood in the initial baseline exposure, without any exposure. And then they wore a smartphone for 45 minutes in a backpack, turned on, ready to receive a call or text, but they did not receive one. It was just a matter of being exposed to what's called a carrying condition, the way many people just carry a phone on their bodies in a pouch or a pocket. And then they had another blood test to look at the carrying condition effect. And then they played with the phone for 45 minutes actively, going on the internet, listening to a YouTube video. And they made 2 5-minute phone calls, holding it near the head but not touching, about an inch away. So I photographed their blood using dark field microscopy, and this is what I found in the subsequent slide. So here's my setup. I have a dark field microscope with a video camera and can take still photos as well. They made finger pricks, or in some cases we did toe pricks as well, because people would argue, well, they're holding the phone in their hand, and that will cause an effect in the finger blood. But of course, the blood is circulating, so just to be sure, I took toe blood samples too, and we saw the same results. Here's how healthy blood looks under dark field microscope. The round, circular black circles are really red blood cells lit from the sides. Then you see one white blood cell moving toward 2 o'clock, caught in the act of motion here. And that's normal. You see many more red cells than white cells in human blood. And the plasma, shown here, is clear and black. There's not many inclusions or debris in this blood. This is the blood of an elderly person on the Weston A. Price diet, but it's very unusual to see blood this good. So here is my 75-year-old subject, female, in baseline condition. Her blood is a little bit sticky and maybe not ideal, but certainly still normal. And after 45 minutes of carrying the phone in the backpack on the right-hand side, you see the blood is all stuck together. The red blood cells are as if it's a roll of coins, and I'm looking at the edge of the roll of nickels. So they're stacked. And this blood is, it simply can't circulate in the peripheral circulation of microcapillaries, because the blood requires you to go single file with each cell through those microcapillaries. And so it simply would not circulate very well in any organ or tissue. It would get stuck.
That was the first part of a presentation by Dr. Beverly Rubick held at the Union Theological Seminary in New York City. As stated by Dr. Beverly Rubick, children and adults over 50 years old are especially vulnerable to non-thermal microwave wireless radiation in terms of health impacts broadcast from cell phones, routers, and antenna emissions. The local resistance, especially around schools, is getting some coverage, but not enough from corporate-controlled media. The growing outrage against certain insiders within local governments that have worked to allow installation of 5G masts and more wireless radiation emissions have been led by local and regional groups and parents. The telecom corporations are openly coming into your community under federal authorization and installing equipment that'll saturate your environment with cancer-causing microwave radiation. Will states and local governments nullify the FCC-based federal legislation mandating the installation of 5G infrastructure? It won't be the first time. States have overridden federal laws on issues such as healthcare, gun control, and marijuana laws. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit InOtherNewsRadio.com for archives and more information about the guests.